main thing is make sure that you don't just hire an ugly guy.
Final part of our meeting of the October 2001 in San Francisco Tesla Society, I'd like to introduce Terry Andre. Terry currently works as a solar specialist at Palo Alto Hardware in advising and helping plan the installation of various solar power facilities on homes and businesses. She has 15 years experience in research and development in the telecom and computer field. Please welcome Terry Andre.
Thank you, George. I'm very, very glad to be here. In fact, I was unaware of the Tesla Society until I received a call from George, and very interested in following up with future attendance at some of the lectures. Today, I'm going to talk about solar from the small business and homeowner perspective. There's the world of solar has a tremendous breadth of things that can be talked about. What I'm going to cover today is solar photovoltaic, which is the electricity generation from solar as opposed to hot water generation. And within that, what I'd like to talk about a little bit, the things I plan to cover are the current state of the industry, what's happening with pricing, what's happening with financial incentives in the state of California, which are relevant to the current situation in San Francisco, and some information about installations over the state and shifting that's going on in the industry that's making it easier for homeowners to make decisions and go ahead and move ahead with getting a generating plant up on their roof. And then I'll spend a little bit of time on technologies. The technology discussion can get very deep very fast, and so I'll do some outline of what's primarily available in the commercial market and then mention some of the things that are on the research table, but I won't go into any depth on those. About 3 years ago, the city I live in, which is Palo Alto, started doing solar energy demonstration homes. And the first home probably cost the family about, well, it was over $100,000 to put in a system. And I don't have the metrics on what size that system is because I was just kind of mentally taking note. A year later, it was about $67,000 for the home that was done the second year. And the third year, it was $15,000. And when I saw that, I had been actually researching other alternatives for green energy for my home. And when I saw that, I said, wow, things have changed. Prices have come down. Incentives have compensated to the point where it's really feasible for a homeowner to be able to do. At this point in time, through some advanced techniques in terms of developing product, they're not technical as much as they are of packaging product and making it more accessible to homeowners, you can actually get a system for $4,500 that will deliver 2,000 kilowatt hours a year. That would be called a 1 kilowatt system. I have this information, the numerical information is back on the table in the back, so if you want to catch up on some of the information back there, feel free to take one of the sizing pricing sheets. I have an earth-friendly car. It's not quite all electric, it's a hybrid. But as a result of having that hybrid, I've been to many, many, many Earth Days over the last couple of years. And while I was at one, someone handed me a little booklet that turned out to be quite interesting. It was called Distributed Micro Generation. And it was, I believe, published by the World Watch Institute. And since that time, I've realized that the concept of distributed micro generation fulfills it counteracts the strains that are inherent upon a utility, whether it be the investor-owned PG&E that we have now or the potential future municipal utility district, which are generation, transmission, and distribution. When you have microgeneration, you have the generation at the source. So right there you've taken care of all three, the generation, the transmission, and the distribution. The other thing that I'd point out is that we here in Northern California had some difficulties in getting energy from outlying areas, I believe it was Southern California, because the transmission lines were not set up to carry the volume that they wanted to move from one area of generation to another area of usage. Financial incentives is the next area I'd like to talk about. There are, in 1978, the federal government passed the PURPA, Public Utility Regulatory Policy of 1978, which required utilities to buy electricity from qualified generators and qualified independent producers. The price given to those generators, however, was the avoided cost to the utility, usually a couple of cents per kilowatt based on their fuel cost. Somewhat later, states individually decided to create what's called a net metering program, and California is one of 37 states that have adopted a net metering program. This replaces the PURPA with a program that allows the utility, or requires the utility, to give full retail credit for electricity generated. They still don't pay any cash to the generator, or in this case the solar homeowner, but they will trade electricity generated at the same rate that the user would be using it at that time of day. The meter will run backwards when there's excess electricity generated over what the household is using. And it's quite exciting the first time you see a meter running backwards. Most homeowners get pretty excited about that. Dividing this incentive programs out into residential, commercial, and then I'll talk a little bit further about proposals that are on the books for federal and state. Residential and commercial both have buy-down programs from the California Energy Commission, and in the case of larger installations, there's some public utilities, there's a PUC buy-down programs. The program currently for CEC offers $4.50 per watt of system. So the system that I talked about a few minutes ago, $4,500 to purchase a 1 kilowatt system, the original purchase price of that entire system, which includes all the panels and inverter, it would be $9,000, and the buy down is $4,500, leaving a net of about $4,500. That's before installation. Installation is not that expensive. Depending on the roof type, the installation can run anywhere from $1,200 per kilowatt up to for the tile and terracotta roofs can be quite expensive. I don't even actually have a quote for what those are. But the flat roof or the composition shingle, which is actually the most common roof that we have out there, the lower end pricing is pretty typical. So it's $1,300 to $1,500 is what I usually tell a homeowner that is trying to get a handle on that cost. The municipal utility districts in our area, Sacramento, Palo Alto, Santa Clara, all offer their own programs. Palo Alto and Santa Clara are offering a $4 per kilowatt buy down. Up until a few months ago, that was actually much better than what the California Energy Commission was offering. And in fact, the California Energy Commission had a program that was scheduled to decrease over time, starting at $3 and decreasing over time. However, in probably May or June, legislation was passed that increased the sum of money in the entire pot available, as well as increasing the rebate for each homeowner to $4.50. And it was retroactive. So those homeowners who installed at the $3 rate did acquire another $1.50 per watt for their system. There's also another alternative, which is a time of use opportunity. Time of use is a metering system that PG&E uses to help incent people to cut back on the peak hours of the day, the 12 noon to 6 p.m. hours. I believe are approximately 38 cents per kilowatt hour versus the time outside of that is about one third of that cost. By installing a solar system, your best energy generation is going to be during those peak hours, and you get your metering and your retail credit at that higher rate, at that 38 cent rate. So depending on how many kids you have at home between 12 and 6 and what kind of configuration you use during that day, if you're not an air conditioning homeowner, that can be an excellent way in which to be able to make the system more affordable. In addition, for commercial owners, besides the buy-down programs and the credit, the net metering program, where they have the same benefit of being able to get full credit for the electricity they generate, they also can get a tax credit of 10% and accelerated depreciation. There's also a program for small business and not-for-profits that gives them a financing program by the State Assistance Fund for Enterprise Business and Industrial Development Corporation for 5% interest, loans of 5% interest. That program was suspended in June, but there's a bill in the legislature to reinstate it, and I would expect, given the current state of affairs, that will be reinstated. Now, in terms of what the federal government is doing in terms of encouraging green and renewable energy sources, there is, in the Bush Energy Bill, which has been passed by the House but not yet by the Senate, a tax rebate for residences of 15%. However, in that same bill, just to give the other side of the story for those of us who are very committed to green power, is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge drilling proposal. On the state side, there are three bills of interest. I'll give you the description and then the number if you want to make a note of this. This is not in the back of the room, but there's a bill in progress to exempt solar equipment from state sales tax. Right now, in my city, you have to pay an 8% sales tax on the equipment. And out of $1,000, another 8% on top of that's quite a bit of money. That's AB 1319. There's also a bill to give a state tax credit of 15% of the net cost, and that is SBX217. There's also a low-interest loan program under consideration. That bill is SBX282. Another area that I have not found legislation for but is of a concern that I'd like to encourage voters to consider is to exempt the California Energy Commission rebate from income tax, state income tax. At this current time, homeowners are going to be liable for state income tax on that payment back to them, the $4,500 on the 1 kilowatt system I mentioned. In terms of financing, real estate secured loans, such as a first or second mortgage or a home equity line of credit, are probably the least expensive. There is also an organization that is offering unsecured loans for up to 120 months at a 10% interest. And earlier I mentioned the State Assistance Fund for Enterprise, Business, and Industrial Development that offers 5% loans for both small businesses and nonprofits. Installations have been increasing. There's a graph at the back of the room that was provided by the California Energy Commission, Sandy Miller there, showing the number of reservations that have come in over time. And you can see a tremendous climb this past spring. The program's been going on since, it's probably been 3 years now. And it was going along very slow in terms of providing incentives for not only photovoltaic, but also wind generation, hydro, green energy sources. The photovoltaic has taken off tremendously this last year, and I think it's a combination of both the energy crisis in the springtime, as well as the growing awareness of the possibility of actually doing your own generation, and a simplifying of how to buy solar energy. The ease of access for the ordinary homeowner is something I'd like to talk about, because this is something that has not quite penetrated the entire solar photovoltaic industry, and I'd like to see it, because it's got to get much easier for homeowners to go out and buy a system. Right now, we're in the stage that the PC was probably in about 1980, up until probably 1985, where it required somebody with dedicated education to be able to give you advice and to be able to understand the advice they're giving you in order to feel safe about purchasing a system. I think we're at the point where we can move to the max phase, and I'm going to explain that to you by first giving you an example of a piece of information that came from, I acquired this yesterday, this was hot off the press. It's from the National California Solar Energy Association 2001 Solar Home Tours, describing a home that was on the tour in Northern California here. Listen to how confusing this will be to someone who does not have a technical background, or particularly who does not have any understanding of electrical engineering. 8 ASE America modules make up an array rated at a total of 2.4 kilowatts peak DC at STC. Each module is rated at 300 watts peak DC at 17 volts. Two trace SW5548 inverters are installed in a trace power module, outdoor rated enclosure. Each one of those technical words would raise a question in my mind, and have in the past before I worked in this industry, as to, well, if they mention it, it must be significant that they're mentioning this point. There must be competitors in the market that have something different, and what is it I need to know to understand it well enough to buy the right system for me? It goes on. Inverters are installed in a series configuration. What's a series? What's the alternative to a series? What does that do? To supply the normal 120, 240 volt electrical service, gee, I didn't know that I have both in my house. Oh yeah, the refrigerator. Oh yeah, the stove. Each inverter can supply a continuous output of up to 5,500 watts at 120 volts, and together can supply 240 volts AC. And it goes on. There's quite a bit more. We're talking about AGM batteries, 48 volt DC nominal output, controllers, pulse width modulated, three-stage charging of the batteries, protecting the batteries from overcharge, and so on. The specifications that are described in the information that's being given to the average homeowner interested in solar is still so complex and so esoteric that I believe it tends to frighten them more than it tends to reassure them. There is another alternative, and without seeming to be biased, I do work with this system, and I'm very proud of it in terms of what it has done. I was not there to start it. I wasn't part of the outfit that put this together, but I can see how this is what needs to be done in the future, and I have seen some other vendors move this direction already. Siemens, which is a German headquartered company, but which has extensive operations here in California, probably about a year ago decided to change how solar is marketed in the United States, and particularly California. They spent time doing the technical pre-work by selecting, they develop panels, they actually manufacture panels, and they're all manufactured here on the West Coast. The silicon is grown in Vancouver, Washington, and the panels are assembled in Camarillo, California. So we're talking about local USA-made equipment. They decided to pick the highest grade of panels that they produced and match it with an inverter that was very strong in terms of its price performance in the homeowner range. They selected that inverter, qualified it, and optimized it for the homeowner's usage. Worked with the vendor, similar to what a manufacturer would do in a OEM situation. They then took the entire system with all of the engineering specs detailed to UL for testing. Each of the components had already been UL approved. The panels had been approved, the inverters had been approved, and so on. They took the entire system there for an additional approval end to end so that a customer can say, oh, all right, this is safe for my home. I don't need to be worried about whether it will hurt me or my animals or cause any fire concerns or cause any serious problems when it rains. They did the engineering once for everyone so that each individual system does not need to be engineered. If we were working with the type of system that we just talked about, you would need an engineer to be able to give you advice and to study all of the options and then be able to bring you back the information. I've seen a shift in the type of homeowners who are buying solar systems from those who are Silicon Valley literate, they've been studying the process for a number of years, they've been studying the industry, and their questions are quite different than the homeowner who wants to be able to put this up simply for the purpose it was intended, which is to generate electricity. And having it pre-engineered means that a lot of that cost is taken out of that for each individual homeowner. The guarantees they put on the equipment is longer than any of that that's required, that any others in the industry, as well as longer than that required by the CEC. For example, the inverter, about the longest you can find on an inverter is 5 years. This system is a 10-year warranty. The panels are 25. Most panels in the industry are 20-year. There are a couple others that are also 25-year warranty. So this is a long-lasting investment that someone is purchasing, something that will deliver value back for many, many years to come. And it can only pay back in greater amounts as power prices increase over time, whether it's due to inflation or whether it's due to the kind of problems we've had this past couple of years. The installation has also been simplified. When Siemens devised this system, they also developed and mapped out an installation kit that is shipped with each system. There's a guidebook that tells the homeowner how to do it themselves. Most homeowners do choose to have someone else do it. It gets done faster, gets done more quickly, and they get a warranty from the installer that the house is solid and there will be no rain leaks for a good 5 years, and that the roof will be the guarantee that the roofer has given them is still in effect. The general contractors work with the roofers directly to be able to make that guarantee. I did put in the back room a single page piece of information, which is the entire capsule of information that the homeowner needs to have. It talks about sizing, it talks about cost, it talks about how much space it takes. It's really not a very difficult decision once the system is pre-engineered to make it simpler for a homeowner. The CEC and PG&E both require fairly extensive paperwork, and the reseller, the vendor of the solar, is the outfit that ought to be handling that. I've found that now that I've perfected my ability to send those in, they get passed and flow right through very easily and quickly. In addition, the permitting process through the various cities has been a bit of a barrier. And my organization, Palo Alto Hardware, has made a strong commitment to work with individual city building and planning departments to work with them on an ongoing basis until they fully comprehend what the solar systems are about and help them to bring their people up to speed. We've been able to decrease waits that were 3 months down to 1 to 2 days. Some cities, such as Menlo Park, it's an over-the-counter 10-minute process. The information that I gave you about 2,000 kilowatt hours for a 1 kilowatt system is based on San Francisco airport weather and latitude. The latitude does affect how much power you get out of the system. The weather patterns here are, as we know, foggy in the morning. If you were going to install here locally, I would recommend that you install on a southwest-facing surface in order to be able to get the afternoon burned off fog. Fog will inhibit generation power. It won't cut it off, but it will inhibit. Another misconception I did want to correct, because I saw that back on the table, or maybe it was on the radio, heat is not an advantage in creating solar electricity. It is an advantage in doing solar hot water, but in actuality, a little cooler is better for generating electricity. Electricity actually does better with a cooler, in a cooler area. So that has some advantages for San Francisco over some of the other areas that are hotter in the Central Valley and Southern California. In terms of practical considerations, the thing to think about in terms of sizing a system are, the most important is how much does your home use, how much does your family use, I should say, because it's very difficult to make a prediction based on home size. It typically varies quite a bit depending on what the family has in terms of appliances and number of children, air conditioning, and even things as simple as how many, the first question I usually ask is how many refrigerators do you have, because oftentimes people will have a very old refrigerator still running. If it's older than 10 years, when they do replace it or cut the cord, so to speak, they're amazed at how much it saves them. So we talk a little bit about conservation so that they can fit the amount of generation on the roof that they'd like to have, because usually the constraint is how big is the roof. The technologies, that kind of segues pretty nicely into technologies. In terms of photovoltaic panels, there are three main types of silicon panels, the monocrystalline, polycrystalline, and amorphous. Monocrystalline is the highest grade of silicon. The boules are actually grown in a clean room. They are the same high quality of silicon that is used in the highest grade of electronics and computers. Polycrystalline is still all silicon, but it is grown, it is the crystalline structure is not as tightly latticed as is a monocrystalline. It's a little easier to grow, the conditions are easier, it's less so consequently the product's less expensive. Amorphous silicon is actually ground in some fashion and spread. You'll notice that on the panel that I have here behind me, there are actually round dark spots interspersed with lighter areas. This is an example of a monocrystalline panel. The light areas are areas, well, let me say the dark areas are the actual round silicon crystal that was grown and then subsequently sliced into wafer thin pieces of silicon, which then have silver wiring painted on them and additional cross-hatch wiring that will collect the electricity as the electrons are excited by the actual photons in the sunshine. The space between is there because to the boules that are grown in a monocrystalline are round to begin with. They've actually cut the sides off in order to get more cells onto one panel. However, it would be prohibitively expensive to actually square them off. There are panels like that. They're more expensive. This vendor, this is actually a Siemens panel. There's a similar one from British Petroleum. There are squared off ones. They're more expensive. In addition, I'd like to mention that on the amorphous silicon, you'll recognize those in that they don't have these spaces between. They tend to be silicon that's spread out, and it will take up the whole surface. Now, that would be, that, again, going back to the same triad in order to talk about price and productivity. At the highest grade, highest price, and highest productivity is the monocrystalline, followed by the polycrystalline, followed by the amorphous. What does that mean in terms of a house that has a limited amount of roof space? It means that if you want the best and most output from the roof that you have, the monocrystalline will be the most effective and the most cost-effective for you in the long run. oftentimes an amorphous panel will be much, much, well, I shouldn't say oftentimes, an amorphous panel will be much larger than this for the same amount of electricity output. There are still many other technologies that are out in the research area. There are that have not yet come to the market in a cost-effective way. Cadmium telluride, copper indium gallium diselenide, copper indium diselenide, gallium arsenide, just to name a few. There are lots and lots of organizations that are working on these things. I would recommend to the homeowner not to wait for those to come out, because you'll probably be waiting another 4 to 5 years, if not much longer, to get it at the cost you can get a typical silicon panel today. And in that meantime, you'll have had the opportunity to generate quite a bit of electricity. In fact, I think 5 years may be a little short for those to reach the same cost factors. There are also roof tiles and thin films which can be integrated into new homes. The roof tiles can be integrated into existing homes as well. They're part of the building itself, part of the roofing. The sacrifice you make is that they don't generate as much electricity as do the traditional panels. The other concern in terms of the roof tiles is the labor involved in installing it's quite expensive. So those are a little bit out of the range for the ordinary homeowner. Some architecturally dedicated homeowners who have more financial elasticity might be interested in doing that. One of the concerns I've had from coming from architects is that the appearance with the different colors is not eye-pleasing to them, and I hope that over time they'll realize that the benefit outweighs the so-called not eye appeal. I think they look really cool, of course, but I'm biased. The reason that these are not colored dark is because having a lighter color allows the panel to stay cooler, and as we said earlier, a cooler panel generates more electricity. Just in closing, I'd like to mention that I've got some information in the back that you're welcome to take a look at, and if you'd like to discuss it further, give me a phone call. And I also provide pre-site visits for customers who are already pretty sure they want to do it, and I'd be glad to discuss the building in advance over the phone if there's an interest there. In terms of resources, I've prepared a short list. The websites are all available if you go out to your favorite search engine. California Energy Commission has some very nice information. The California Solar Center is an organization that is a not-for-profit that provides information, and they probably have the best information on pending legislation. Tor Allen, who could not be here today, provided some of the information that I've presented here on the industry in California as a whole. And he is the person who started that and has been running it very effectively. Home Power Magazine also has a website, or you can subscribe to it. Home Power can get quite deep into the technical nuances, so it's actually a good resource for those who might be interested in going building a home in an off-grid situation where they're going to want battery backup and that sort of thing. Palo Alto Hardware has a website, and as well Rear Goods and many of the other vendors also have generalized information on their website. So I'd recommend that using the web is a great way to do research on the topic. And I do see one question.
Yeah, I'm an electrical engineer, and I didn't respond to you said the things that you say affect homeowners, not enough information in them. I'm the opposite of that area, so I'm also an electrical contractor. I did go out and see an installation just last week on a couple of Trevorville, and they put in a small system with a contractor, another contractor did. And I was very curious because I said, hey, this is a good business to get into. I think I want to get into this business. So I got on my website and started looking at different prices and figures. And I question whether these are economically feasible, honestly. Let me ask you just one question. What's the typical output for, I see some of the figures you have back there for installed per kilowatt, dollars per kilowatt, contractor, non-contractor on that. Those are old figures, I assume.
Yes, and they're based on the entire industry as a whole. The one I described that encompasses systems that require individualized engineering.
The small systems. How many kilowatt hours? Forget the giggles thing. How many kilowatt hours can you expect per watt per year on a typical system? In other words, let's say we're near the airport on that. I mean, the dollars have come down as to your kilowatt, how many kilowatt hours you're going to get out of it, or how much are you going to be getting back realistically.
Yes. The chart that I've placed back there, you might be very interested in. It actually lists the kilowatt hours. And that's the first question that I work with when a homeowner is interested is, how many kilowatt hours are you using? Because the output of the system is that's going to give you benefit is the kilowatt hours. It doesn't have anything to do with how many watt system it is, which is what the industry typically has been talking to people about. A 1 kilowatt system of the Siemens kit gives 2,000 kilowatt hours over a year's time. A 1 kilowatt size system. 2,000 kilowatt hours.
Most of that over a year?
Yes. The kilowatt, the name
per
kilowatt.
You're talking about, not per kilowatt.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
2,000 kilowatt hours per watt, not per kilowatt. Per year. You're saying 2,000 kilowatts?
A system that is named a 1 kilowatt system produces 2,000 kilowatt hours in a year's time.
Okay, this is hours times watts, divided by 1,000, okay? So what you're saying essentially is,
to get the kilowatt hours.
Too low for either. And I'm arguing that that's not economically feasible.
You know, I think most consumers were used to being billed monthly kilowatt hours, and I guess I'm somewhere around 109, if I remember correctly, 150 a month. So that's just about right for some system like that.
Well,
$150
per month
is probably,
1,800
or something per year.
So you're actually, that would be a fairly low. Most homes are taking about 2 to 3 kilowatts of systems.
Yeah, but I'm not moving home. In an apartment.
Right. Just to mention for renters as well, and they're is an installation in the Solar Home Tour over in the East Bay where a renter has put a system up and made an arrangement with the owner of the facility that satisfied the owner that there would be no buildings damaged and is able to generate the power for themselves. And I would imagine that when they move, they'll plan to take it with them. It's an investment I'm sure they'll want to carry with them.
You're talking about a 10 cents a kilowatt hour and maybe $200 a year. That you would say, taking that system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'll say 10 cents a kilowatt hour. $200 a year. Now, I had figured that install cost would be $10 a kilowatt, a watt installed.
Based on the pricing that you found on that you found on in your research yesterday?
Pardon?
Based on the information you found in your research that you did yesterday? Okay.
There are two prices already filed, for a lot for pounds, basically. Am I wrong on that? About $5 probably.
Let me slow the discussion down a little bit here. This is getting into a technical area. I've been aiming this discussion to homeowners in general, and I might ask the rest of the audience, do they want to go into the technical area, or is this audience interested in the, because I can take this question offline. Okay. I think two things probably have factored into what you found on the web, and one of them is very obvious, which is they probably don't have the buy down. $4,500 includes post-buy-down. It also does not include installation. If you add installation for a tile, composition tile, it's more like $6,000. Now, the other aspect that, I'm drawing a blank here for a second. Yes, the pricing that you found on the web is pricing, I frankly must say that the pricing on the web surprises me. Real goods pricing is quite a bit higher than what we're able to offer some of the same types of equipment at. I think that's where the industry is going to change, where it will be more affordable as more people are interested in buying and the industry is shifting and changing. The payback time is what many people are interested in. I haven't done a calculation in a couple of months. But for people outside of Palo Alto, they typically come up for themselves with a number somewhere between 7 and 12 years.
Am I right? Oh,
I'm just wondering, in terms of bringing the cost down even further, maybe it's not a realistic question, but is it possible that a company may someday come out with a kit that where the do-it-yourself or actually grows the crystals themselves, you know, that that might lower the cost or the position and enhance manufacturing process that that kind of thing?
I would say it's probably an intense manufacturing process. I think if you take a tour of a chip plant, you'll see the kinds of equipment that get involved in keeping the room clean and handling the actual slicing of these things off of the boules is incredibly precise. In fact, that's one area, that's the most sensitive area in terms of manufacturing.
And how much energy is actually used?
Mm-hmm. Didn't bring the information with me, but it has been calculated and proven by several different sources that solar energy nets out as being green. The actual energy used to produce it is far less than what it generates over its lifetime.
My understanding is that most people have a total system that's converted to 120 or 240. Have you ever worked with anyone with a house with a dual volt system, similar to their yacht or their motorhome? They just install solar voltaic as a secondary system as a backup.
As a backup, when you say dual, what do you mean by dual?
Talking to dual, they have at least 12 volt DC running through the house and 120 volt AC.
I think the best solution, I haven't had a homeowner that has that, actually. Okay. Let me put it that way.
I designed so you have the 12 volts for the house and the lights and then you
I have friends who have such a house. They live off-grid up in the Sierra Nevadas, and they have different circuits for different appliances. Because it's more efficient to not invert to AC, so they've purchased a DC refrigerator and so on. So it's very doable. It's basically an off-grid battery back system.
Yeah, just go down to your local Marine Hardware and pick up one of your systems.
Maybe that's a way for future homeowners to go in the future too.
What is the efficiency of current inverters such as the Siemens system?
Gosh. I believe it's in the 93% range.
And then for, let's say that I have a television set, let's say it's a tape recorder or something, and it has an AC adapter and you're plugging it into the wall and it's converting it to DC. Most of our appliances, how much is lost from a step-down transformer?
That's a really nice exercise to think about, George, and I think it'd be great if you did some numbers for us. Because we certainly do have a lot of transformers on our electronics.
About 90, most transformers are somewhere in the range of 94%
to 95% efficient. So it's not losing a huge amount of electricity or energy in the inverter process. There's some, but it isn't a whole lot.
Yeah, that's true.
The most efficient thing anywhere along the lines, as opposed to a longer engine, anything else, that's pretty efficient.
There's an interesting piece of information that you reminded me of, which is called the phantom load, which good energy audit will start to take an awareness of in your home. The boxes that have, the appliances that requires a box to be plugged into the wall do use electricity while they are, while the appliance is actually off. You'll notice that I've got a CD player that is from Germany that I've got an adapter on, and that little box is always warm whether the CD player is on or not. So it's worthwhile to unplug them or put them on a power strip that you can turn off when you're not using that appliance.
Is it, I mean, how realistic, I mean, everybody is used to having their remote TV, you know, and having preheated, so it goes on instantaneously, and maybe a microwave clock to stay on, and all the other devices like that, and really, how much power does that use? I mean, the convenience of that, I think everybody starts to try to want to do that. I mean, people that say, pull the plug out of your TV and everything else and using it, and then you're going to go around and plug it in every time you use it. That just would be realistic in my book.
It looks like it needs some innovation.
Well,
there's probably lots of wonderful electronics engineers who can.
Yeah, anytime they use an appliance and plug it back in, like your TV and your.
No, but there's room for innovation so that you actually don't have to touch the plug.
Yeah, and I part of Energy Star that's working on trying to innovation.
It's amazing how many technically oriented people have been working in this field. There are a tremendous number of them. And if you look out on the web, you'll be surprised at what kinds of devices are already out there that can make things more convenient. Well, I'd like to say thank you. And
one
more question.
The car.
Well, at the last minute before I came up here, I thought, I better grab the car information because there were a couple of people who warned me that there was interest in the Insight. When I started showing it at Earth Days, I made up I think it actually is literally 10 bullets to answer the 10 top questions. Recently, I bought the car on Leap Year Day a year and a half ago, and just recently, it's been a slow process learning how to drive it so that I get the mileage that I should get out of it. And it started with a friend of mine saying, well, why don't you just pay attention to that arrow going up and down? The arrow going up and down was totally different than my natural, since I was 15 years old, learning how to drive a stick shift. And so I was ignoring the arrows, thinking they might not be as accurate as my natural driving ability. And I wasn't getting very good mileage. So when I started doing that about a year ago, my mileage shot up. But it still wasn't what I would expect to get from what the EPA mileage records were. In August, I took a trip from California to Colorado to visit friends and also family. My trip from, I'd learned a little bit more, I guess I should preface this with, and from Lake Tahoe, I reset all the meters, to Steamboat Springs, it was a 500-mile trip, and I got 70 miles per gallon over that trip. It was on Highway 50, by the way, it was not on Highway 80. And there was stop and go. I'd see something and I'd say, gee, I want to go back and see that. Because I was on my own and it was an opportunity to kind of do the Blue Highways kind of a trip as opposed to taking the interstate. So that had some stop and go. It was definitely not commuting traffic, but it was a surprise and delight to me to be able to see 70 miles per gallon. I do hear about owners newer to the cars that have learned from the past experience of owners who've had their cars longer that are getting even better than that. And I just don't ever mention my lifetime average because it's not very good because of the first year that I drove it. So 70 miles per gallon on the freeway, 61 miles per gallon commuting is what the EPA says. I can't get 61 commuting in Palo Alto. Palo Alto's got a tremendous number of stop signs, and it's a bit difficult to do that. It does, one thing I want to emphasize, because there's a misconception oftentimes, it never needs to be plugged in. That's why it was the right car for me. If I was only going to own one car, it had to be one that I could drive all the way to San Luis Obispo, which is my birthplace. So an electric car wasn't going to work for me. The motor recharges the batteries when it's decelerating. There's also a little bit of regeneration with the braking. This particular car uses electric power when it's accelerating and uses pure gas when it's just cruising. It's built to be quite light, and it just kind of slips along as it once you get it up to speed. And the major thing that I had to learn in my driving ability was to really use those batteries when coming out of a stop and put it into first gear, take it up to 18 miles per hour, and then put it in second, take it up to 55 or 60, and then put it into fifth gear. That made a tremendous difference in my mileage. It's a little embarrassing, though. The only color they had was red, so I'm kind of careful when I see a cop, because despite that being legal, a jackrabbit start on a red car always kind of raises flags, so I've been kind of cautious about that. The acceleration is pretty incredible, 0 to 60 in about 9.5 seconds. And the car is only a two-passenger car. The rest of this stuff I won't read to you. Actually, though, you might be interested, they're nickel metal hydride batteries, 144 volts. And there is actually a gas and electric engine, which are integrated in the Honda transmission. And it takes regular gas, which is nice. The other nice thing about it is I probably go 2 weeks without refueling, which is both good and bad. Sometimes I forget to refuel, and I wind up having to buy at a very expensive gas station. But the good side of it is that you can pick and choose what gas station you want to go to for the most part, because you've got all 2 weeks to find a cheap one. Once again, any questions? Dan, did you have a question about the car?
Just to be consistent with the inverters and the alternators, do they have like a 5-year warranty, or how long are some of them?
We'll have to go down and look in the book.
How many hours
does it fit
in the shops that you plug?
Oh, that's a really, really good question.
And what does it cost? I mean, you can't just take it to your normal auto mechanic.
Yeah, I do take it to the Honda, and I've been very particular about making sure that the Honda person who works on it understands the insides. It uses a very thin grade of oil that I don't know if the other hybrids in the market use that. As far as repairs, it's had nothing. There have been a couple of minor things, like some light sensor came on and stayed on, so they had to do some kind of a resetting of the electronics. I damaged it when I was trying to camp in a off-road location. It's a little low centered, and you shouldn't drive it over a rutty road. But so far, I decided to leave it that way. It's not causing me any problems. So the oil changes are farther apart than I've always been. A 3,000 mile oil change person, and they don't want me to come in that often. They want me to come in more like 5,000 and 10,000 miles.
Wow.
So that saves money in terms of going in there, because it is expensive if you have to go to the new car dealer to get your oil changed in.
What's is it ever overheating, like going over a mountain
pass, or? I haven't had that yet.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I do have arguments with myself, though, about whether I should keep it at high speed at the building so that people don't say, oh, we're
going
to go to the
gate. Okay, so this is Terry Andre, hybrid electric gasoline car.
So you can describe. We can start over again if you want. Okay. All right.
It is very neat.
You can see the battery charge and the fuel battery charge is on the right, the field charge is on the back too, and then this is on the left. And then up above, it'll show activity when you get, when you're using battery, and then it shows activity when you're recharging the battery. And you get instantaneous monitoring.
Mm-hmm.